Welcome everyone again to our third session of the series. And I just want to maybe open it up at this time, given that we've had two sessions. We spoke about the cultivation of wholesome conditions for wise speech and listening. And last time we shared some teachings around why speech in the sense of avoiding and cultivating, both in the mode, which is how we engage in our speech, as well as some fun set of contents that we shared, both to avoid and to cultivate. So we want to just offer some time for anyone who may have questions or comments or experience that you may have had in this last few days in practicing wise speech and see what you observed. And please do use Zoom hand if possible. And so, yeah, the floor is open. Maybe this is an early part of our class, and there's taking a little, a few moments to gather ourselves together. So, Julie.
Thank you. I've noticed over the past few days, I'm speaking less. And I feel like I'm listening more. So I'm grateful for this. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I remember one of the teachers told us, you know, have 2 ears and one mouth. Listen more. So, David.
Yeah, thanks. I had a conflict last session. So if you covered this, please ignore it. But I'm just wondering, you know, this whole spectrum of harmonious and divisive speech, you know, in our era of belief bubbles and polarization and identifying with beliefs and judging others harshly, you know, I'm just, did you discuss at all how we approach that practically? And I'll tell you my the thing I struggle with, unless you covered this all before. I struggle with the obligation to speak truth and to promote non-harming, be kind, with promoting harmony. It seems like we live in an age where those two are more and more inconsistent every day. So, and then I guess I will add that it seems to me that the Buddha, among his followers, could be brutal in speaking truth, but he was much more circumspect with other people. But I take that not to mean that he avoided truth. I think he was always trying to be aim his speech, and you correct me if I'm wrong, where it would be most effective and skillful with his audience. And now I'll shut up. Thank you.
David, you shared a lot of wisdom, right, in what you shared. Yeah, so the context of our speech and how a Buddha responded based on different situations, the circumstances that he's in. In fact, the second teaching today will touch some aspects of this skillful speech in the context that we're in. I saw David, Laurie had unmuted. Did you want to say something?
Perhaps, and I may have lost part of it. There were several things that David brought up in the question. Good question. And we did, in fact, we don't cover these things and then they're covered. You know, we did sort of engage around some of that, that kind of question. And I think an interesting distinction or an interesting additional idea to bring in when we talk about speaking truth is speaking honestly. It has a different feel. And I have this sense for my part that I can get kind of hung up on my truth or the truth. And yet speaking honestly, even with discomfort around, various truth bubbles or belief bubbles, can be a way to engage the skillful speech practice that, you know, that kind of leads somewhere. Sometimes it's easy to get in a little defensive place about the truth or my truth. Whereas if it's a verb and it's about speaking honestly or acting honestly in the world in interactions, somehow that opens up to me additional possibilities. So I just offer that as a, sort of a additional comment really on your questions.
Maybe I'll throw my voice in here just for a little bit too. This speaking to try to change other people's minds.
Right.
Yeah, right. Most often it doesn't work. People don't change their minds just because somebody told them something new, unless they're in a particular space in which there's a real dialogue happening, you know, in which they are wanting to understand something better. And so this, David, I'm sure you know this, but this is part of the skill, is to recognize, okay, is this a place where this can be heard and this could be incorporated into one's belief structure? Or am I just speaking for some other reason? And I'll talk a little bit about that this morning, but just this recognition that often people don't change their minds just because they've heard something from somebody else. And that might influence what we choose to say and when we choose to say it.
Thank you. Thank you, Diana. Winnie, that will be the last question before we get into the teachings.
Well, I had this situation last week where I realized my mind is not as calm as it could be. And sometimes I just speak speak impulsively. So I was thinking, there's this person, rather than, in my opinion, and I know this is being judgmental, she'd rather have you do the work for her. Like she says, oh, I don't know how to use Google Map, and I've never learned it. You know, and then I go, oh my gosh, you know, this is the 21st century. Why hasn't she figured out how she going to get from A to B? And then you realize that I was actually being very judgmental. And what I ended up saying was, well, you know, you can really just learn this on your own. You know, I'm not an enabler. And then I realized after I said that, I go, oh, that was the wrong thing to say. And then when I reflected on it after, I go, well, kind of late. But then I text her and says, I'll show you how to do it next time I see you. But then it was like, oh, it's too late. And so I think when you're talking about, right, speech is a wise speech, you have to have a calm mind. And because otherwise it's easy just to go with whatever your immediate emotions are at that moment. And that's what happened to me.
Wonderful. Thank you for sharing that, Winnie. Yeah. And I think the first class we also talked about cultivating wholesome qualities of a heart and mind that are conducive for wise speech. And you're spot on. You know, if we are impulsive, compulsive, based on habitual tendencies, and then it's hard to trust what flows out of us. But if we cultivate calm and ease in our being, it's a lot more conducive for wise speech. And also say that you're practicing what's shared in Majjhima Nikaya 61, that, you know, you're reflecting, joining before joining and afterwards. And so we can learn. So that's just putting the practice right there. It's wonderful. And I think, you know, how you responded later on out of a kindness to offer this, it's not wasted. You know, it's a supportive for yourself and for others. Yeah, even if they don't change behavior, but it supported your own heart. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Diana.
Yeah, thank you, Rennie. That's kind of it's a nice segue into what I'd like to talk about a little bit this morning. And that is, you know, of course, in the Buddhist tradition, in this tradition, there are a lot of lists. And I love the lists myself. I'm one of those people. I just kind of like the lists. But they also can be restrictive. And we can feel like, well, I just checked these boxes and that should be good enough or something like that. But that's, of course, not how our lives unfold. That's not how we are in the moment necessarily. So the lists are really helpful. And they really are pointing towards direction to go. So these lists of how to say and what to say can be a support, but there's also ways in which we can see them in action. We can see these little vignettes in the story and the suttas, and from these little stories, we can learn something as well. And so these, I'd like to share a few stories and maybe with an aim that they point to something, that they find that they're inspiring, that they point to a possibility of how to show up in the world and how to behave with speech. So less because we have to do precisely what they're saying, but more that we kind of like take them in and make them, how would I have behaved in a similar matter in the modern context or something like that? So to be inspired by them as opposed to feeling like it's a checklist. And again, you know, the checklists, of course, they're helpful too. So just we're taking all these different ways in which the teachings come to us is helpful. So I'm going to start with one story. Some of you may be familiar with this. It's a common story, but I'd like to use it as the foundation and then build on it with some further stories. So this first one is about the Kosambians. And here's how it's described. And I just kind of love this language, how Bhikkhu Bodhi translates this. And he describes the setting this way. On one occasion, the bhikkhus at Kosambi had taken up to quarreling and brawling and were deep in disputes, stabbing each other with verbal daggers. Just kind of love this, right? Deep in disputes, stabbing each other verbally. You could feel it's like, ouch, you know, this. And so one of the monks sees this is happening. He goes, tells the Buddha, you better come, they're fighting. And the Buddha shows up. And one monk essentially says, buzz off. We can take care of this. And the Buddha's like, what? He doesn't say that. This is my interpretation, of course. But and the Buddha shows up again. And this monk says, buzz off. So like, okay. So the Buddha, he actually does leave. And he leaves them to this fighting. But then he goes and he speaks. And here's part of what he says. When many voices shout at once, no one, so like no single voice, thinks they're a fool. While the Sangha is being split, no one thinks themselves to be at fault, right? When we're deep in disputes, we're convinced that we're right. Otherwise, we wouldn't be disputing, right? And then he continues, dolts, so like maybe fools or something, I guess, dolts. Pretending to be astute, they talk obsessed by words alone. They blab at will, their mouths agape. No one knows what leads him to XO. And I will say, I certainly have found myself in this position where you're kind of like in a dispute. You feel like you have to defend yourself. You feel like you have to, you get activated. You say things that you wish that you hadn't have said. So the Buddha continues. And here's one thing that he says that I think is so great. And we see this pulled out as a particular teaching all by itself. Hatred never ends through hatred. By non-hatred alone does it end. This is an ancient truth, right? When the verbal daggers are flying, more verbal daggers doesn't make it better. But by non-hatred alone does it end. And sometimes this non-hatred gets translated as love. But I like to leave it as non-hatred and describe what are some other ways that people show up rather than just throwing more verbal daggers. So one is with kindness. And it's in the same sutta where they're talking about these monks that are fighting. The Buddha leaves. He goes to another place, the Eastern Bamboo Park. And as he enters this park, there's the park keeper who says, "Oh, sir, you know, you can't enter here. There are some monastics. They're practicing and don't disturb them." So this park keeper doesn't recognize that this is the Buddha, right? The teacher of all everybody. Just so, right, he's not being accorded the respect we would expect for him. But one of the other monastics hears this conversation. Says, no, let him in. He's the Buddha. He's our teacher. Let him in. So they have a little bit of a conversation. And in this conversation, the Buddha asks them, "I hope that you're all living in harmony with mutual appreciation without quarreling, blending like milk and water, regarding each other with kindly eyes." And they respond, "Indeed, Venerable Sir, we live in harmony." And then the Buddha asks, "Well, how do you live this way? What is it? What's different for you guys versus those people over there that are stabbing each other with verbal daggers?" And they say, "Well, I think I'm fortunate, very fortunate to live together with spiritual companions as these, having some gratitude. I consistently treat these venerables with kindness by way of body, speech, and mind, both in public and in private." So saying that I have some appreciation, some gratitude, and in my mind, I'm treating them with kindness, with respect. So that's one way in which this non-hatred shows up as kindness. And we can be inspired by this. It's not always easy, right? It's sometimes when we hear these stories, we want to gloss over them, and this is maybe something we can feel inspired by. I consistently treat these venerables with kindness by way of body, speech, and mind, both in public and in private. So in our minds, to think of people kindly with gratitude. Here's another vignette. So some of you will know that the Brahmins are was part of the dominant religious culture at the time. And one particular Brahmin had heard that one of his fellow Brahmins had converted, so to speak, and had gone over and become a disciple, a follower of the Buddha. And he was angry about this. And he wanted to give the Buddha a piece of his mind. So maybe it's telling that his name is Bharadwaja the Rude. So right in the Buddhist scriptures, he gets this name. We don't know exactly what his name was, but Bharadwaja the Rude. He goes to the Buddha, and abused and insulted him with rude, harsh words, verbal daggers again, right? And the Buddha responded with a question. "Bharadwaja the Rude, do friends and colleagues, relatives and family members and guests still come to visit you?" "Yes." "Do Do you offer them food or a meal or a snack when they come to visit you? Yes. If they don't accept the food, to whom does it belong? Well, in that case, it still belongs to me. In the same way, Brahman, when you abuse, harass, and attack us who do not abuse, harass, and attack anyone, we don't accept it. It still belongs to you. It still belongs to you. So in this way, this non-hatred shows up as just some self-confidence, some recognition of, I don't have to take this. I don't have to take it on. Just because they're spewing this doesn't mean I have to accept it. Again, I want to say, you know, these are stories. Can we be inspired by them? It's not always easy. We get triggered. We get affected. But it's pointing to this freedom that is possible with practice of having some equanimity and not having a strong sense of self that has to be defended. You know, we have to show up that we're right, or that who do you think you are treating me that way? But instead, just to simply let it pass on by. So the Buddha, still talking to Bharadwaja the rude, says, when you know that the other is angry, you act for the good of both yourself and the other if you're mindful and stay calm. Right? So it's not just for us, it's for others, right? Everything that gets de-escalated if we're able to not just accept it this way. So then maybe I'll read, here's part of another story. And this is a nun. And she's going to practice to meditate in the woods. She's a completely awakened person. And this guy shows up and sees this woman alone in the woods. Her name is Suba. This gets translated as beautiful. Going to the lovely mango grove of Jivaka, the nun Suba was held up by a rascal. Suba said this to him, "What harm have I done to you that you stand in my way? Sir, it's not proper that a man should touch a woman gone forth." Gone forth means someone who is ordained. "This training was taught by the Holy One. It's a serious matter, my teacher's instructions. I am pure and rid of blemishes, so why do you stand in my way?" She recognizes that she knows that she's an awakened person. One whose mind is sullied against one unsullied, one who is lustful against one free of lust, unblemished, my mind is freed in every respect, so why do you stand in my way? This young rascal replies, "You're young and flawless. What will going forth, that is what will ordaining, do for you? Throw away that robe, come and play in the blossom grove." And here's the young man says, "I'll be under your sway if we stay in the forest. I love no creature more than you, O pixie with such bashful eyes. Your eyes are like those of a doe or a pixie in the mountains. Seeing them, my desire grows all the more." Right, so here he is trying to seduce this nun. And she responds, "Well, you may try to seduce that, the type of lady who has not reflected on these things or has never attended the teacher. But this is a lady who knows. Now you're in trouble. No matter if I'm reviled or praised or feel pleasure or pain, I stay mindful. Knowing what conditions are ugly, my mind clings to nothing. I am a follower of the Holy One, riding in the carriage of the Eightfold Path, the dirt pulled out, free of defilements. I am happy, and I've reached an empty place." And then here's kind of the startling part of this poem. "And I, a is just a ball in a socket with a pupil in the middle and tears and mucus comes from there as well. And so these different eye parts are lumped all together. The beautiful lady ripped out her eye with no attachment in her mind at all. She said, "Come, take this eye," and gave it to the man right then. And at that moment, he lost all his lust and asked for her forgiveness. "Oh, may you be well, O chaste and holy lady. Such a thing will not happen again." So nobody's going to pluck out their eye. But just this idea of saying that no matter if I'm reviled or praised or feel pleasure or pain, I stay mindful. Knowing that conditions are ugly, my mind clings to nothing. So just pointing to freedom, practice freedom, helps us to show up and respond to speech, whatever speech it might be, in a way which can help bring freedom to everybody, to not only to ourselves, but to others around us. So maybe with that, and I'm sorry, Ying, I went a few minutes over my time. I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Diana, for this beautiful stories, that startling stories in some ways. So we are going to then enter an explicit speech-related practice in a breakout room. And so hearing this inspiring stories, and maybe it inspires us to practice in a wholesome way. So this breakout room and the exercise that I will offer is also a build up. I kind of think about it in circles, that when we're putting you into groups and you're kind of building upon one another. And the prompt is, how does wise speech support community? As you gather into the breakout room, maybe you can kind of imagine yourself in the in a community, and in what ways wise speech might support community. And the exercise that we are going to do is the first person speak something in relationship to that question, maybe one sentence, something simple. And then the next person will repeat the first person's answer as close to as what is being said. And so this is also a listening exercise. So you pay attention to what's being said. And then add a point to this first point that's being said by the previous person. And then the third person will repeat the point that the second person said and add his or her or their point. And so this way, we're kind of a building a set of responses in this way. And I encourage you to, as you go through this practice and this exercise, pay attention to both the how you're speaking, how you're listening, as well as the content. And the content of the response is not to be kind of evaluated as a right or wrong, but to just simply take in as some gift that the person shared. And so notice that this is both a listening and a speaking exercise, as well as paying attention to your state of being, your bodies and your heart and mind. And we'll do this spiraling exercise for about 7 minutes. And so it kind of build itself up. And we can start with maybe alphabetical order as you get into the group, the first person with the alphabetical order that you can start. And if the first person did not feel like starting, then maybe you jump, skip to the next person and see if the next person is ready. And after 7 minutes, we will let you to do a debrief in terms of how the process felt for you and how did the exercise itself supported building a sense of a community in the group. And that'll go on for about 3 minutes. And I will put in a prompt for that portion of it as well. I think that's probably all that I needed to say. So see if David is ready for us. Okay, so enjoy. Back. I feel like maybe you're all in, still in the midst of a conversation that we're cutting you out. Have a good exercise. So, let's see, did everybody come back? Yeah. So we have a little time for you to share, maybe debrief and see how this went as an exercise. Or any questions about the teachings so far? Anyone? I'm seeing some of the smiley faces. And yeah, Wendy.
I think in my group, listening is very hard. And so in this exercise, really trying to reflect on and go through this, the exercise makes you think, wow, if we could do this in real life and really listen deeply, it would make a big difference. But because this is all part of a simulation, it was interesting in that this is a possibility. But of course, we'll go back to real life and not be as good as we were in the small group.
Yeah, it's a gradual training. We use our life to practice, right? And as much as we can. And so even though this is kind of a constructed simulation, you know, maybe we bring this in spirit in our real life and to listen more. And practice, cultivate. Eileen.
And can I just add there, Ying, that in the spirit of sort of bringing these ancient teachings into our contemporary practice, how often do we now find ourselves in breakout rooms where it's not just a simulation, it is how we're practicing wise speech or engaging with skillful and unskillful speech. So it's actually not that much of a stretch to the real world.
Thank you. Eileen.
Thanks. And I can follow from that. I live in Hawaii, where a common way of people talking is someone says something and you repeat what they said and add to it. That's a conversational style here that I've always appreciated because it means that the people are listening. And so then you repeat what they said and add to it. It's a really, it's a way of building the relationship. It's, you know, it might sound like they're just talking, but they're building the relationship. In this simulation for me, it felt free of the carefulness and competitiveness that I have often felt at work, where you have to be careful what you say and it has to sound pretty brilliant or, you know, there's criticism. To be free from that was really a beautiful relief.
Yeah, beautiful. Thank you for pointing that out. You know, this is part of a listening to someone else and repeat it. For me, it's a real sense of unifying. You know, we're really, it's kind of like it says to the other person, I really heard you. You know, I'm here with you. And then expanding as a way to contribute to the broader community rather than kind of in this, you know, while other people were talking, we started thinking about what we're going to say and getting into a competition mode. Yeah. Jerry.
Yeah. we ended abruptly, so I wanted to thank the people. And I'm refusing to call it a simulation. It was a real moment where we followed the guidelines, and it really was quite beautiful, and I don't think I was alone. Very nourishing, and it felt such a nice feeling came out of our movement towards safety and comfort, and it was really great. So thank you for that opportunity, and thanks again to the group that I was fortunate to be in.
Yeah, thank you, Jerry. Leslie.
Our group struggled a little bit. And I'm going to try to give skillful feedback to the teachers because I think there might be some solutions to improve for our particular group what happened. So what happened was one of the people had been busy doing something else, so they were distracted and they didn't really know what we were doing and kind of said, maybe we're doing this. And so then one of us had to say, no, we're doing this. And so I thought, well, one of the ways to decrease that from happening would be to have printed the question in the chat. So you don't have to feel like you're the one telling people what to do. You just refer to the chat. The questions in the chat. And then the other thing was some of the people weren't really very familiar with the spiral method. And so I thought, many people are. So this is not a criticism in the sense of I know that many people are familiar, but some people aren't. And so I wondered if you've ever tried demoing, you know, amongst the teachers, especially when you've got three teachers. Like, this is what we mean. And then it would help for people who are new to the method. So that is just some feedback. Was that skillful?
Thank you. Sure. Comment. We love feedback. Really, we receive them. We receive them as gifts to the teachers. Thank you for that. I love this demo. Yeah, so we could have demoed it. Maybe a lot easier. Yeah.
I appreciate that. And I just want to add that I think it's true for us as teachers and others that the breakout rooms are sort of a black box to us. And so that's really useful to have some feedback. We very much appreciate that. And very skillfully said. So,
thank you. And I appreciate it. I think Jerry also offered a little feedback in terms of maybe their time was too short. People got cut off in between. Yeah, so those are all just wonderful gifts that you offer back to the teaching team where we can learn how we might improve and support people. I think we're going to switch to David for a guided meditation.
Yeah, let's bring some of this wonderful practice into a meditative setting and see what comes to us. And maybe the sort of spirit of this little 15-minute meditation is letting go a little bit around our objectives to become better, more skillful speakers. That may sound ironic, but let's take our meditation postures, close our eyes. As we close our eyes, become aware of the rebalancing that happens as we bring our attention from the visual world that so engages us as visual creatures, bringing our attention to the inner world, our inner life. And maybe even notice a sense of attention moving in and down into the body, into the center of the body where the breathing is happening. And part of this rebalancing is a letting go. We bring attention to the breath for so many reasons, but one lovely thing about the breath is we don't have to do it. It does itself. We let go with the breath. connecting with the breath. We let go of a sense that we need to be better breathers, that we need to plan the next breath, that we need to fret about a breath we took 10 seconds or 10 years ago. As we bring attention to the breathing, there's letting go happening. And we can rest in that letting go. We don't have to make the letting go happen. We're not making it up. We're just noticing that it is happening. Maybe connecting with the breath where we feel it in the body, in the abdomen, perhaps the chest, the shoulders, the nostrils, noticing it, filling out the body with each inhalation, noticing the body resting, settling in, settling down with each exhalation. Maybe for the spirit of this meditation, we can think of skillful speech as a beneficial side effect of this practice of knowing letting go. We can take the title of this class, Open Heart, Open Mind, not as an order, not as an instruction, not as a objective, not as a goal, but maybe as questions for our experience. As we rest in the breathing, as we rest with the voices that we use in directing our attention back to the breathing again and again, we can just ask, open heart, open mind. We don't have to force the heart open. We don't have to make the mind clear. In the meditation, we can be curious about our experience. Our attention becomes snagged on thoughts, caught up in emotional currents, attracted to sensations in the body. And with great kindness, without any hurry, we can return our attention to the breathing happening in the middle of our experience. And as we do this, as we redirect our attention to the here, to the now, to the here-ness and the now-ness of our experience, we can just keep checking in. Open heart, open mind. Maybe we find the heart constricted. Maybe the mind is foggy or unclear. We're just noticing. when we return attention to the breathing, when we drop in these curious questions, open heart, open mind, we can let go of preference around these. We can let go of any prejudice or judgment that comes up. In the meditation, it isn't our aim to make the mind clear or to force the heart open, but be attentive to how things are for us. We can just let these questions fall and notice what it feels like when the heart's open, when the heart's more constricted or tight, when the mind sees clearly, and when it sees less clearly.